When Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu falls on hard times, be it corruption charges at home or diplomatic isolation abroad, he depends on his most faithful followers. But they're not all Jewish. His biggest block of support is arguably the 4 million-strong community in the United States called Christian Zionists. And they've emboldened Netanyahu to fight the West's nuclear deal with Iran and attempts to start a Palestinian state. Well, Sean Durbin is the author of the new book, Righteous Gentiles.
Christian Zionism is a relatively recent term, and it basically is a label that gets used to describe Christians who believe that the modern state of Israel is the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. They saw the creation of the State of Israel in 1948, and particularly its expansion in 1967 to encompass Jerusalem, what they describe as sort of signs of the times. So for them, the creation of modern State of Israel meant that within their lifetime, they expected Jesus to return. In its sort of more contemporary context, they tend to sort of define or understand Christian support as kind of a divine duty, essentially. And one of the arguments that I make in the book is that although certainly not all evangelicals or all Christians identify with Christian Zionism, and many see it as very heretical, those that do identify with it, they want to have the kind of authoritative idea of what Christianity is. And for them, that means being a Christian Zionist and supporting Israel, and particularly in sort of its expansionist endeavors.
You can see, Sean, why it would be a seductive form of theology to some on the right in Israel. But is Christian Zionism actually sympathetic to the tenets of Judaism as a faith?
Well, in a lot of ways, and that's a lot of the kind of criticism that gets leveled at them, is that they don't really care about Judaism, or they still essentially see Christianity as the true religion, whereas Judaism has been superseded. But in fact, they are, in many respects, sympathetic to Judaism, and they sort of, the way that they kind of frame this is to sort of say, well, if it weren't for Judaism, then Christianity wouldn't exist. There's a lot of threads that sort of make up Christian Zionism. It's not a singular thing. One of the things that they tend to emphasize is this sort of debt that Christianity owes to Judaism, not only for producing their Messiah, Jesus, but also, if it weren't for Judaism, then Christianity wouldn't exist, and therefore they wouldn't be able to be saved. I guess part of this, in a theological sense, is that Christian Zionists still maintain that for them, God isn't finished with Jews. He has an eternal covenant with them, and it's through that eternal covenant that Christians are sort of able to have this relationship with God, and therefore they're able to kind of maintain their truth claims about the world.
Is it, though, a genuine theology, or is Christian Zionism really a political ideology, one that is designed to support the expansionist agenda of Israel's right wing? Not the entire Jewish people, but the Israeli right wing.
That's an interesting question, and I think it's one that gets sort of asked a lot. It's clearly political, but for them, they claim, no, this is not political, this is religious. What I sort of argue and demonstrate by focusing especially on their rhetoric is the way that they reconstitute political activities as acts of religious devotion.
In what way? Because that's fascinating. What political activities do they dress up as religion?
One of the ways that they do that is by describing what they do, their political activities, by relating them to biblical stories. A big focus of Christians United for Israel over the last 8 or 9 years has been focusing on Iran, and they're very opposed to the Iran nuclear deal that the Obama administration made. So they're very excited about the Trump administration's overturning of that deal. The reason that Iran kind of works in this sense and their political lobbying against the Iran nuclear deal is that they use the book of Esther from the Hebrew Bible, or the Old Testament, as Christians tend to refer to it, as a kind of typological example of the way ordinary people get used by God to do things to kind of further his plans in the world. The book of Esther takes place in ancient Persia, which is associated with modern Iran. There's a woman there who is not Jewish. She gets asked to warn the Jewish people in the Book of Esther that there's great danger for them. And what happens in that book is that the person who has kind of plotted this plan to kill all of the Jews in ancient Persia ends up being killed in the exact same way that he had planned for the Jews to actually be killed. And Christian Zionists cite this example as basically a manifestation of a text in the book of Genesis, which is Genesis 12:3, which is probably the most cited piece of scripture that Christian Zionists use. And in Genesis 12:3, it says, "I will bless those who bless you, and those who curse you, I will curse." And so contemporary Christian Zionists like Hagee often cite this and say, this is exactly the situation that's going on with Iran. And we are the kind of contemporary Esthers in this sense. They basically redefine their political activities as acts of God. So they become God's instruments and are acting on his behalf.
Right. You mention Iran there. Am I right in thinking that Christian Zionism really got a major kick along, as it were, after 9/11 with this widespread antipathy to many Muslims around the world?
So this is another dominant theme within Christian Zionism, yes. And I think this is one of the ways that Christians identify with Israel, because in a sense they see Israel's conflict with Palestinians as a microcosm of essentially the West's conflict with Islam, or what they claim is the West's conflict with Islam. And so again, one of the ways that this is naturalized or made as this kind of ongoing theme throughout history is through examples that they find in the biblical text. But it's basically framed within a very dualistic worldview. So what happens is that Islam is under the influence of Satan, Christians and Jews are under the influence of God, and therefore conflicts like the Israel-Palestine conflict, or this generalized idea of a conflict between the West and radical Islam, become imbued with this sense of theological meaning, which therefore makes it almost appear as though it's a timeless expression.
How do Christian Zionists then view the plight of Christians of the East? I'm talking obviously about the Palestinian Christians, although their number has been diminishing over the past 20 years, but Christians generally of the Middle East, who are often very sympathetic to the Palestinians, who were part of the original Palestinian secular national movement. Where do they fit into the Christian Zionist ideal?
In many cases, they just don't typically get mentioned. Another very easy way of sweeping that aside is to sort of suggest that, in fact, they're not really Christians.
Even though they're parts of the oldest Christian communities in the world.
Yeah. But then, on the other hand, they do tend to highlight that the Palestinian Christian population is dwindling, and that is because of radical Islam in Palestinian territories. And so they can kind of identify them as Christians when it's useful to sort of say, Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. Israel is the only place where Christianity is thriving in the Middle East. And in places like the Palestinian territories and other Middle Eastern countries, the kind of Arab Christian populations are dwindling because of their persecution by Muslims. And so they kind of get bounced around and get used in different contexts for different arguments that they want to make, essentially.
Are they nakedly partisan? I know Bibi Netanyahu draws a lot of comfort from the Christian Zionists. Do they know what they're doing in terms of their partisanship?
I mean, they absolutely love Benjamin Netanyahu. I can't prove this, and so I write about it as a kind of form of myth that is useful in their storytelling of their origins. But one of the things that got talked about a lot during my research and going to CUFI, which is the acronym for Christians United for Israel, going to their events, is that they claim that actually the organization started at the behest of Netanyahu, who asked Hagee, you know, oh, you go around the world having these pro-Israel events, but it doesn't have any political effect, so you need to start a political organization that can actually make a difference. In many ways, they essentially trail the policies and the ideas that he has, and so it would be interesting to see if an Israeli prime minister had very different views about what he wanted to do, if he wanted to, for example, not have complete control over Jerusalem or something like that, how they would respond. But in that sense, I mean, they're kind of just following the line of the Israeli right wing, and they like that.
Your book is built around the figure of John Hagee, who is a mega church pastor in the United States. Just tell us who he is and this organization over which he presides.
Hagee's been around for a while, and he is a relatively controversial figure, but he certainly gained a much greater hearing with the Trump administration. Christians United for Israel was established in 2006, and it's kind of been growing since then. And the reason that they claim that it's growing is because they're doing God's work, and therefore God's favor is falling upon them.
And what sort of numbers are we talking about?
They claim a membership of 4 million. How that works is unclear because, I mean, I'm a member of their email list. So if that is what counts as being a member, then obviously I'm counted among those numbers as well. But every year they have what's called a Washington Summit, which is an annual multi-day event. A few thousand members will go to Washington, D.C., and they have this kind of conference which goes for a few days. And typically it involves right-wing think tanks, other kind of very hawkish speakers explaining the importance of Israel. Those particular speakers don't speak specifically about religious significance. The religious significance kind of comes from sermons, other things in their church. But then these events are punctuated at the end by a kind of very formal lobbying of congressional representatives and senators, et cetera, on the kind of things that they talked about. So it's essentially kind of a rallying event. And then these members will go with a very unified voice and tell their senators and congressmen what they think. And it is always a very hawkish kind of point of view. Hagee, during the 2008 election, when John McCain was the Republican candidate against Barack Obama, Hagee came out in support and endorsed McCain, and McCain accepted his endorsement. And then it came out that Hagee had said a sermon from a few years back emerged where Hagee had claimed that God had used Hitler to get Jews to leave Europe and go and settle in Israel. And that was deemed to be beyond the pale for McCain. And so he denounced the support. And so Hagee said he would never again endorse a candidate, which of course hasn't borne true because he was very much in favor of Trump, who he also defines, I would say, as God's instrument.
So just finally, Sean, another way in which Christian Zionists seek to connect, as it were, and this happens in Australia, I understand, is through tourism. What are these tours that the Christian Zionists market?
Yeah, that's right. The Christian Zionists engage in tours of Israel. I participated in one, and I've actually got a chapter coming out in a really fantastic edited volume, which is specifically about myth-making and identity formation on Christian Zionist tours of Israel. But essentially what they do is that they're very kind of well-planned tours that take kind of lay Christians around and then define Israel and give them this picture of Israel that sort of really represents Israel as the fulfillment of biblical prophecy and as a demonstration that God's word remains true, that the Bible is accurate in all of what it says, and essentially that Israel has a divine right to the land and that it's kind of uses selective information and particular stops to explain this. And it just kind of really bolsters the support, and it sort of makes it a bit more real, I suppose, because they're there. And essentially they see a thriving, vibrant Israel, and that is then represented as, again, the fulfillment of biblical prophecy, of claims that are made in the Bible about how Israel will be sort of thriving again and children will be running in the street and this kind of thing. Essentially, modern Israel almost becomes more significant than thinking about it in its historical context of walking where Jesus walked kind of thing, which is something that interests Christian tourists to Israel as well. But for Christian Zionists who see the state as, you know, an ongoing sort of vessel of God's divine will, just its sheer existence and engagement with Israelis becomes something of a kind of religious experience itself.
Great to talk to you. Fascinating stuff. Sean Durbin is the editor of Righteous Gentiles, Religion, Identity and Myth in John Hagee's Christians United for Israel. Sean, thanks for joining us on the program.
Thanks very much for having me.
And you can hear a longer version of that at the Religion and Ethics Report website.